The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. It is the first full day of summer, June the 21st, 2012. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, joined by Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO. And Dave, I'm in the middle of Dante's Toronto. If I'm sounding slow or I'm off game today, dude, and all listeners, like, pre-apologies. There's this heat wave hitting the Northeast, and things are just going a little bit slower out here these days.
Welcome to my world every day, Jim.
Well, you know what? You're used to it. This is Canada. This is Eastern Canada. It's supposed to be, moderately, cold. Oh, my goodness. It's about 92 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and with all the humidity and the dampness hanging in the air, it feels like 105, and I'm sitting in an air-conditioned room, and I'm feeling draggy.
Global warming?
Well, hopefully it'll slow down to the same pace that we over here on the West Coast are just operating at.
You see, this is why I loved living in Victoria all those years, Dave. Like, it would be 19, 20 degrees Celsius, somewhere like comfortable, 68 Fahrenheit. And that was summer. That's a warm summer. You know? Perfect sweater weather. Perfect sweater weather every day of the year.
Yep, and if you want to just go a few hours up island, and then all of a sudden you can have some heat if you go on the inside. Anyways, our listeners don't need to listen to us babble about what the weather and climate are like over here on the West Coast versus East Coast. But my sympathies to you and your brethren over there for the what I hear is absolutely miserable heat.
I've
lived in Ottawa. I know what it's like, and it sucks.
Chris Bogues is in town. Chris Bogues from Rosetta, president of Sempo, and him and I are supposed to get together later tonight. And when Chris and I get together, weird stuff happens. Like, it's usually pretty funny. A couple of weeks ago, he was in Toronto for SES. We found ourselves at a booze can somewhere at 7 in the morning. Actually, I had many of the Sempo people at that booze can. There's a reason the industry is as much fun as it seems. So anyway, today is going to be a bit of a weird one. Pub crawl. That is a brilliant idea, Brasco. Brasco in our private chat writes, go on a pub crawl. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of pub crawls and drunken sailors and all that sort of heady crap, how's things going with Facebook? I have no idea where that segue came from, but...
Well, you know what? I mean, it somehow, being absolutely hammered, would explain more about what's going on over at Facebook. And I don't mean internally in Facebook. I mean, there's lots going on. Of course, I'm watching the news over at Facebook probably more closely than I have watched the news on any individual company ever. Like daily, just because I am so disheartened, maybe disgusted is a better word, by the shares. It was funny. I mean, obviously, I'm in a weird way kind of happy for investors who got in early under bad advice, but who got in early. Great, they're recouping. They're probably selling right about now. Going, cut our losses. we're down to the lower single digit losses. We bought at 38 or 45 or whatever. Let's just get out now. But the spike, for those who haven't been watching Facebook's share prices, it's up quite dramatically over the last few days, like enormously dramatically. It was hovering down at its low at about $25. Now it's back up trading. Well, I'm looking at it right now at $31.77. Now here's the crazy. Here's what gives me no faith in our entire system. And it's funny because you and I on Facebook were having debates over different parts of different flaws in the system. Oddly, I think they're kind of related. You and I were talking more socio-political over on Facebook earlier. An irony here. Now we're looking at just the pure stupid economics that goes on here. If we look at the news look at their shares, and Google's very great. They plot news points in there. Obviously not everything, but they plot the news points. If you look late last night, like towards close of day 3:34, you'll see that the news is there's some decent news pieces, or inert news pieces, but nothing earth-shattering, nothing that would let you know, hey, Facebook's about to, take over the world. And some talk about the patent settlements. Then overnight and this morning, launching in, is the only real news stories coming out about Facebook are related to, more negative things, but just, things related to the IPO and lawsuits and this and that. I mean, nothing that would make me expect it to go down, nothing that would make me expect to go, but it spikes this morning.
There was a big thing in the morning
with nothing but basically either inert or bad news. It spikes. There was an announcement about some advancements into mobile, but we all knew that was good.
There was another announcement that was made yesterday that may have had an impact in the shares. Facebook has bought a facial recognition system with the extraordinary domain name face.com. It just completed its $1 billion purchase yesterday. This is a system that is going to help. I mean, like, while you were talking a few moments ago, I was thinking a little bit about Yahoo and why we were so personally, incised to the point where you just had to mention Yahoo at any point in 2011 and you and I would just start laughing. Because we were just so frustrated with the stupidity of it all.
You see how that happened? Yep.
Okay, but I want to ask a quick question, and I think this goes to the perception of the value of shares at Facebook. Why were we so incised about Yahoo? I mean, this is a time of great economic disruption. Companies are coming, companies are going, billions of dollars are just flying around, in loss and profit, and the numbers are much bigger. Why were we so freaked out about Yahoo? I think because we had a sense of ownership over it. Now, Facebook, you and I have been laughing about the value of Facebook for over a year now, yet we engage each other for hours at a time in these truly pointless political debates, socio-political debates, in Facebook. I mean, it's driving our clout scores through the roof, certainly. But I'm not really sure the value of those debates, except we're in a space in which we have a sense of ownership. Now, anyone who bought early, say they got in at 48, say they got in at 30-something, say they're some of the lucky folks who are buying the shares that are selling at 31 right now. Let's think about the long play here with Facebook for a second. Like, what if a year from now, 2 years from now, Facebook finally figures out how to monetize 1/7 of the internet population? Like, seriously. The problem with Facebook right now is nobody can see a truly clear profit model for them. I always say a truly clear revenue model that produces the mega profits Google produces. Because don't forget, in this world, everything's compared against Goog. If it ain't Goog, it ain't good. So Facebook, I think that there's an emotional reaction to Facebook, as well as the logical calculation you have to go through in making investments, that since it's a place that everyone who is part of it, or the majority of people who participate at Facebook, have a sense of ownership, of belonging, of real community. We were arguing with a fellow whose initials are like BR over on Facebook, like all day today.
Yep.
Now, he and I adamantly disagree on some stuff. But one thing I'm positive we'll agree on is we owned that space we were in. You know? You did too. Yeah. So did KS, and so did anybody else who was like involved in that discussion thread.
Yeah.
We all owned that space we were in. And there's something to that sense of ownership, that sense of inso community camaraderie. Agree or disagree? You know, we were having a relatively intelligent debate.
We were. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's a phenomenal space. I mean, you know, obviously I like Facebook. I'm there all the time. I mean, I guess I can't say all the time, but I'm there periodically throughout a day. You know, it's where I'll go at lunch, even if I'm just looking to find videos that other friends and I have. It's integrating in with, with Bing. Fantastic. And that actually makes me want to use Bing more because it's got Facebook data now being pulled into it, right? So I can I can see what my real friends, all of whom are in Facebook, are thinking about. Fantastic. I don't think anybody, myself included, can debate whether Facebook is an enormously valuable property.
But it's the revenue model, isn't it? It's a damn revenue model.
And, I mean, there is this promise, right? Everybody's doing this investing based on, hey, and, I mean, they've got all these users and they could have a revenue model. Well, let me tell you, you know, there's lots of sites like that. I mean, heck, you know, well, Rob, we had him on the show. I mean, he's got a very, very popular site, thousands of visitors a day. Offer, you know, on a free service, doesn't have a revenue model. Can he now value that company based on, I got a lot of users, I just haven't figured out how to make money off them?
Well, we would have back in 2000.
Well, that's, okay, valid point, but it doesn't anymore. And, I mean, you look and it's like, well, recently one of the big issues that they're having, and it's part of the Face.com purchase, is, well, they haven't figured out how to monetize mobile. Okay, let's say they figure that out and they double. So now every user's worth $2. Does that even possibly explain what their valuation is?
Well, no, no. But when you're touching 1/7 of the internet like community, that's, again, they don't know how to make hay out of it. But there's a big field there.
See, and that's the thing. I mean, they have this large user base, but there is the crux meat. There is the problem, is until you can show me that you can make money, why are you worth anything? This is the problem with the way all... It seems to be pretty much isolated into tech companies, but it expands a little bit, but it's definitely prominent here, is this idea that I should invest in something because it's inherently good that people are there. Well, no, it's not. Right? I mean, you know, otherwise you could charge a lot just for, you know, kind of being around the Washington Monument. Lots of people go there, right? It's like,
well, that's
funny.
That
doesn't actually make it intrinsically valuable, right?
I was just thinking.
It's not that space there is fundamentally going to make money. It doesn't. So, I mean, just the fact that people are there doesn't do anything.
I was just thinking about Facebook as a public square. And, you know, use your Washington Monument example or analogy. The thing about Facebook is it's a public square that comes and goes depending on the engagement. You know,
right.
There's as many public squares as there are Facebook users. And at any given time, I may have 2 or 3 different public squares going. So it's not a public square that we're all jumping into. There's not like 900 million people in the same place. We're all looking at it on our monitors, you know, and these are all very personal public squares. Now, is there value in feet? This is the weirdest thing about making money on anything on the internet. In the Webmaster Radio chat room, by the way, if anyone's listening live, jump in the chat room. There's an interesting conversation happening on whether micropayments will become a norm. We have to figure out how to make money off of the individual user, but there's so many of them, and the surplus of users is so huge. That, like you said, so they're only worth a dollar a user at Facebook. Maybe they become worth $2 a user at Facebook, but that's still too low to produce a significant Google size revenue for their shareholders.
Yep.
So what do we do? You know, every individual's a micropayment opportunity, but the web has been free up until this point. We have to change traditions entirely to make the web worth paying for, and we're even having this conversation. Where, you know, somebody like me who would be radically against people paying for information.
Well,
the space to make money.
Here's the long story, I think, to me anyway. There are lots of things Facebook can do. Right? I mean, there's WAX. You and I can agree. I mean, they have a massive user base. There is tons of stuff they can do that can possibly generate money. Right? I mean, you know, they could launch an Amazon-esque e-commerce platform and sell stuff directly there. I mean, they could do that. And, I mean, they, you know, it would probably be quite successful. They can figure out how to monetize mobile. Lots of ways they can do that, feeding ads, doing this. Tons of stuff they can do there to monetize it. But to me, until they do that, they're worth nothing. I mean, you know, they've got a large value, but they're not worth, comparatively with what they're being valued at now, you can't do that, right? It's like saying, well, you know, Ford could eventually take over all the main auto manufacturers and get 100% market share, so, you know, we should value them as if they're going to take over the world now. Well, no. It's a possible outcome. They could decide to sell Slurpees, for all I know, right? But, you know, the fact is they're not right now, and so they're being based on revenue models that make sense. And it's just, I'm very, very worried, and it actually sparked me onto Facebook to go, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the stock market would be like if they made, when you made a purchase, you had to hold it for 4 weeks. Like, if you couldn't sell after a purchase for 28 days, what would happen to the stock market? And I think we would see a much more realistic, oh, crap, I actually have to put my money into something based on what I think the value of it is, because I'm stuck with it for 4 weeks, and so it better be worth something. And I think it would adjust entirely the way the stock market is functioning right now, where you are dealing with people with artificial money going, well, if I can increase it by 0.2% out of air, right, then I'm going to make a bunch of cash out of it. Whereas, you know, if you were stuck in a situation where you went, what is the value of this company? Because I am stuck with this thing for 28 days. So if it's not valuable and that comes out in that 28 days, I'm kind of hooped. And I could lose like double-digit percents, you know, I could lose a ton of money. It may make investors a little different and make them actually go in going, I need to actually believe this company is valued. And I'm pretty sure you would see stocks like Facebook worth significantly less if shareholders actually had to believe the value of the company was somewhere even kind of similar to what they're valuing at right now.
I'm going to suggest that day trading made the nature of investors different. And that's led to a lot of problems. But we got to go to break to fix a technical problem that Dave and I are experiencing. Luckily, the listeners aren't hearing it, but we're hearing this huge echo between each other. But when we come back, I want to talk about something that I think actually adds a great deal of value to Facebook. And this is something that was announced for the Microsoft camp this week. Microsoft's introduced, it's finally brought Surface Computing into my laptop. And we're going to be talking about that on Webcology when we come back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
Join the thousands of search and social media marketers at one of the largest events of the year, SES San Francisco 2012, August 13th through the 17th. Learn more at sesconference.com. SES San Francisco 2012 kicks off 3 days of sessions with a keynote presentation by Google digital marketing evangelist Avinash Kaushik, speaking about business optimization in a digital age. Check out daily Meet the Expert roundtables, where you can take part in intimate and informative discussions with industry icons. Add over 70 sessions, a crowded expo floor, on-site training at the ClickZ Academy, the big search engine watch Eliminator,
goodbye,
and webmasterradio.fm search bash, and you'll have SES San Francisco 2012, August 13th through the 17th. Register for SES San Francisco 2012 today by clicking on the banner ads from the webmasterradio.fm website, or go now to sesconference.com.
How much time do you spend on SEO research and competitor analysis? What if we told you that there was an easier, faster way? SearchMetrics SEO software propels you to top positions on search engines around the world with our unique global search, social, and competitive data in over 60 countries. Gain a competitive advantage today with SearchMetrics.com. That's SearchMetrics.com.
How far do your ads reach? You don't have to fly around the world for the right consumers and clients to find your business. What you need is profit through performance. Location 3 Media helps you to increase your brand's findability and performance. Let Location 3 Media help you create efficient and effective online marketing campaigns that fit your needs and get you results. We know every click starts a journey. Where will your brand be on the path? Visit Location3Media.com.
Don't get caught in a web of confusion.
Learn the ropes on WebmasterRadio.fm.
We're everywhere.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Webcology here at WebmasterRadio.fm. It's the 21st of June, 2012, the first full day of what's going to be a very hot summer here on the East Coast. This is Jim Hedger, Digital Always Media, joined by Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO. And Dave, I want to talk about tablet computing. Not just screw tablet computing. That is so passe. I want to talk about Microsoft Surface tablet computing. I'm blown away by this.
You and me both. I'm going to say I have, and maybe in a weird way, I'm an early adopter on some things, and I'm way late on others. I've always hated tablets. Just always. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm either going to use my phone, and that's my portable thing, or I'm going to use a laptop because I like to have a keyboard. But like, it's got different functionality, and I want one.
Yeah.
I want one of these things. And all of a sudden, my hatred, and I mentioned a few weeks ago when I was running the demos and stuff, and I decided to reinstall it on my laptop at home, is I hated Windows 8, and now all of a sudden, while it still kind of annoys me, it all makes sense. Because if I want to be able to control all my different devices with the same thing, I need an interface that's going to make that make sense.
And, I mean, like, Windows 8 was clearly made for this device.
That's exactly it, isn't it? And you can see where they're going to interconnect them, and you can see where, I mean, if you look at it at the 360, you can see it could easily be adjusted. I mean, it's on the same principles. It could easily be adjusted to sort of mimic what we're dealing with here on Windows 8 and integrate just beautifully.
Well, normally we talk about, like, SEO, design subjects. Often we talk about, like, the law in relation to webmasters and stuff. And we very rarely talk about new devices, new computing devices, handheld devices, or new computers or anything like that because, well, you know, we figure the audience just knows. But one thing I've liked about doing this show over the years is we've often dealt with devices that are going to change the way webmasters have to approach our work. And this is one of them devices. Now, maybe Microsoft hasn't made the game-changing device, but they've pointed the way down a path that I think is going to be adopted. I mean, especially if you think about what they're doing with Kinect, the hands-free gaming system that's now been morphed into a system for hands-free computing.
Yeah.
Looking ahead a year or so, the way our site visitors are going to be working with websites we build or that we work on is going to be really different. And so that is going to affect everything from eye tracking to user behavior to the calls to actions we create. You remember the big red button up there in the top right-hand corner because that's where the eye was supposed to be attracted to?
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe it'll be mid-range, like chest level, because that's where my hand is going to point first.
Right.
So things are going to change, and that's why I want to look at a device like this. But the reason I thought about surface computing earlier was we were talking about Facebook, and you're talking about, you know, Facebook's information partnership with Bing. And in the SEO world, we're all thinking about what is going to either steal audience share from or displace Google, because, you know, it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said, makes me want to use Bing more, a phrase we didn't hear last year, but we're hearing more and more for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Although the value of the Twitter feed going into Bing is, like, substantially reduced today. Jesus. We'll get to that later. We tweet about it, but we can't. I think that if this is a way to make using Facebook easier, more fun, more intuitive, and I'm pretty sure Microsoft and Facebook are going to be making deals backwards and forwards, mm-hmm. I think it's a... again, Microsoft, this may be another Xbox. I don't know. Xbox sold really well, but it wasn't the thing. This may be another Xbox. But even with Xbox, Microsoft pointed a way forward. And I suggest they're doing the same here.
You know what? I completely think you're right. And what really interested me about this one is more the way that it made my brain start to think. Exactly what you're saying. It's like as a marketer, you go, okay, what does this mean 3 years from now? And I think you hit nail exactly on the head. When we talk about, say, the Xbox and we've got Surface now, I may not have my computer near me when I'm gaming. I may not, but I can see a world where I'd have my Surface sitting on the table in front of me and getting the walkthrough and it connecting with my Xbox, both with the same core operating system on them. So it knows where I am in this game, great, and it's walking me through. It's where I'm communicating with my friends. It's got the, you know, monitor watching me while I'm gaming on my screen, right? Where now we've got this, to me, it sort of represents this pure interconnectivity in this leap forward. And it's not just Surface, it's that, and then the way Windows 8 is built and what, you know, we've sort of seen, you know, and I don't even know that it will be called the 720, but informally it's called the 720, you know, in the next Xbox generation, and seeing all of this sort of coming together and going, yes, and it's exactly what you said, what this represents. It may not be Microsoft. It probably will, but it may not be. And then the paramount threat to Google that this could be. You're right. I mean, jokingly, I was gaming with some of my old high school friends a couple months ago. The only reference to Bing that was made or that I'd made as far as using it for something was when one of my friends getting frustrated and walking us all through the interface of the Xbox trying to find some maps to download. So then, okay, everybody, go to Bing. So off we went to Bing. Okay, now what do we search? No, you don't search. I just wanted you all in the same spot. Now click your right button. Right? That was the only use of Bing I'd had in ages, was using it as a marker point on the Xbox so that I could go somewhere else. and now looking at it as a pure function thing, you're right, this could be a huge win for, you know, or an interesting win for Facebook if you get this pure device connectivity in with Facebook as well. Probably won't help them monetize too much, but, you know, there you go. You know, at least we'll get those eyeballs. Big win for Bing. And to me, what this represents more than anything else, though, is a phenomenal opportunity for marketers because we'll have these multi-devices. But some interesting challenges for us to face, and something that you talked about that I think is something we really need to be thinking about is I may start watching something on my TV. I may start watching a video or even playing a video game on the Xbox. I may continue onto my Surface, right? I probably wouldn't continue onto my phone because it's a much smaller, but on the Surface you can, or I may move over to my computer now that all these things will be syncing up if you know, the live games are going to be available on all of them, and I'm sure they will be, you know, or if things that I'm watching are moving from one place to another, or things I'm engaged in are moving more seamlessly from one thing to another, so my desktop is exactly the same on all of them, and I'm starting at exactly the same spot on all of them. Go ahead, track conversion and user device in that environment. that's just a disaster, but I could see it happening. I'm sitting at work, working, grabbing my Surface, you know, heading home, lying in bed, working a little bit, and then coming back to work the next. I mean, track my conversion now.
Dude,
and you know, they'll figure. Yeah?
When's the last time you were in Ross Dunn's office? That's over there in Bastion Square.
Ages. Ages.
Okay, well, I was there in...
But I haven't gone wandering through his offices.
I was there about a year ago, maybe 10 months ago. And I got to tell you, the dude has like five or six monitors that he's using at the same time. He has them like three of them arrayed like in a semicircle around where he works. And he has two of them above that. And some of them are referencing like different computers, but most of them are referencing his main desktop. But all of them are able to sync with his various devices. Okay, like Ross has his office truly, what's the right word? Truly decked out, eh?
Yeah.
So if he wants to move information to his mobile device, He's dragging and dropping using Bluetooth. It's a wonder to behold. It's terrifying to behold. And this is all the little, you know, I mean, Ross being the ultimate Uber geek, this is the little techie environment he's created for himself. And I see, you know, this kind of device being part of that environment. You say you probably wouldn't move a game to your phone, but I bet you'll be able to do a whole bunch of stuff on this kind of tablet device, as well as keeping your financial world in order, being able to order and pay for a meal right at the restaurant using this device.
Yeah.
The security issues are going to be a nightmare. But, you know, we were talking about the potentiality of Facebook making deals with Microsoft, or some major players making deals with Microsoft, because let's face it, the little fish got to get together to go after the big fish while the big fish is feeling kind of weak.
The enemy.
You know what's going to happen at the end of it all, right? I mean, it's going to turn into another big cluster F with, like, Steve Ballmer getting all freaky or something. Steve's in the house. See, that's the kind of man that Zuckerberg is dealing with. And this is, therein lies the problem. Okay, on that short clip, we are going to be taking another break here on Webcology on webmasterradio.fm. You're listening to Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media in Toronto, Ontario, and Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO.
A little early,
out there
isn't
in
it?
Victoria, British Columbia, and Brasco down in Miami, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
It's a little
Florida.
Early, Jim.
Huh?
2:30.
What? We shouldn't take a break?
We took a break like 10 minutes ago.
Okay, forget the break.
Give another 10 minutes. Let him have cake.
The thing is, I don't know what we're talking about next. I was going to use the break to figure out where we're going. Dave, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, sure. Put me on the spot. I'm going to just direct any of our listeners. I'm going to toot my own horn here for a second.
Go for it.
My latest article's out on Search Engine Watch.
What are you bitching about this time?
You know what? I'm not bitching about anything this time.
Nice! Okay.
It's actually an article on... It was sort of a follow-up on my last one. It's on the anatomy of internal links. So here's how internal links are weighted. But it was more a follow-up last month, and there's a link to it right in today's article. And it's titled Anatomy of an Internal Link. And I discussed last time sort of the mathematics of it, you know, sort of based on the original page rank formulas. And, you know, here's how number of links and hierarchy of your site and following different hierarchies. Here's how the math of the weight passes from one page to another. So, you know, basically, here's how you could determine the best hierarchy for your site. Because here's how the math flows through it. So if you start with 100 on your homepage, here's how it's all going to filter down, counting your, you know, which pages link to each other and stuff like that. But I didn't get a chance to take into account in that article because it was just going on and on. You know, things like location on the page and you know, how is this link formatted and things like that. So it's an article more discussing the, you know, which regions of a page are links on, which ones are more relevant than others, you know.
Well, let's get into it. The synapses in my brain are firing. That lit me up that lit me up quite well. I was gonna make one of those Kevin Ryan like sweeping references there. But I'm not going to because, yeah, like a Christmas tree. That'd be up like a Christmas tree.
There you go.
So this is, you know, links on page and how links should relate to each other internally. You start off by saying location, location, location. What is so important about the location of an internal link? Can we just direct people?
It's interesting. I mean, these are the things that you and I mean, I'm going back like 12 years here or something, used to stand on a deck and discuss. Right? I guess the technology of the search engines hadn't quite gotten up, but even then we kind of knew where things were going. This idea that Google's trying, and I was very careful in the article to refer to it as search engines, but let's see, right now we're concerned about Google. Google's having to try and mimic as best they can, and they've gotten very, very good at it over the last few years, figuring out, okay, how are things being arranged on a page? How prominent is an element of a page? This is links, this is images, this is text. you know, where is it being positioned with the style sheets and everything, and how much is it built to draw the human eye? Because, of course, what they're trying to do is sort of qualify the content and elements of a page based on how important are they to the visitor. So if you take something like your main navigation links, which I put as first or maybe second most important link zone on a page, you know, one might consider the header logo because it's such a common link to the homepage. But after that, you would end up with the main navigation because it is where we look. It is where a webmaster will define what are the most important pages on my site because these are your main navigation. They go on every page. Well,
and also, reading like a bot, that's the next logical place for the bot
to
hit.
The next logical, exactly. And then comparing it to, say, your footer links or something like that. Well, these are not meant to be seen. They're below the fold. They're there because you need to have a privacy policy link. Right? Something like that, right? I mean, that's your footer. You need a copyright date, and you need to put, you know, some links that you don't really care about too much, but you feel the need to have, you know, affiliate program or whatever put in there where you don't want to draw attention to it, but if people know to look for it, that's where they can go. And it was more sort of discussing those elements or the use of things like bolding, which in some of the comments people were like, bolding, really? Yeah. If you have a bold link beside a novel, which one is built to draw the eye? Which one am I trying to focus your attention on? And if you look at all of your links in that context and go, which one am I trying to draw attention to? I mean, we're dealing, and I think it's important, and you and I, you know, have been around long enough. I think some people were maybe reading the article as, and I mean that when you bold a link, it's worth five times more than this non-bold. No, we're dealing with fractions of percents here all the time.
Infinitesimal.
And if you're bolding all your content, it all goes out the window because you're boosting the relevancy of everything and negating all of it, right? But if you're doing these subtle links, attracting the eye, you get this fraction of a percent. Well, you know, you and I've been we've been SEOs long enough to be in some pretty hardcore competitions. Sometimes 0.1% matters, right?
Well,
sometimes
sure,
0.1% is five positions because it's so close. It was more an add-on because I wasn't able to cover last month the sort of, I'm a math guy, but you know that, right? I love stats and numbers, but I just wasn't able to cover these subtleties, and I think they are important for people to understand. Not all links are equal. If I have a big list of links in my sidebar, well, Google's going to see a list of 50 links and go, no one of these is going to draw the eye. Right, like if link number 32, this is not a prominent link. It's 32 in a list of 50. And then there is no drawing of my eye over to this link. It's clearly not something that is deemed ultra important as far as a visiting target. So you know, this link would be devalued. Whereas you know, if I have a list of, you know, two or three of my main products on my homepage, and you know, they're images and they're, you know, sizable images, you know, not stupid sizable, but you know, solid images, you know, with some text below them, sort of describing to get that relevancy in there, this is going to hold more weight because it's clearly meant to attract the eye to it. So, you know, just these sort of ways to think about it while you're building out the hierarchy of your site. Because I've seen so many sites so poorly developed, just missing these key points, and you sort of going after, tweak them up, and you know, just from these subtle changes that you can do, end up helping both your visitors by putting the navigation the way it should. I mean, Google, kudos to them, and so Bing's all right at this too, but they're actually getting quite good at mimicking what's good for the visitor, being fairly solid for the engines as well. So that they've managed to pull this off fairly well is, in doing this for SEO, you're probably helping your site for your visitor as well. And
if I had it more together, we got to go to break. I'm trying to find a joke to go to break on. If I had it more together, I'd make this Disciples of Jacob Nielsen joke, but it's just not there. But I do want to come back and talk more about link placement, and you know, I also want to talk about creative CSS design, but it's 20 to the hour, and so that preemptive break we were going to take before we should take right now. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You're listening to Webcology on webmasterradio.fm. Stick around, back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
Oh, yeah. My day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Johnson, what's this mantis I keep hearing about? Do we need to call an exterminator?
No, sir. Moby Mantis is our new SMS marketing tool.
SM what?
SMS. Text messaging. Moby Mantis lets us communicate directly with our customers in real time. We can send promos, coupons. It even lets our customers market for us by sharing offers with their friends online. It's been great for business.
Sounds expensive.
Actually, I sign us up for an extended free trial. It hasn't cost us a dime.
Good work, Johnson. I guess the only thing we'll be exterminating is the competition.
To get your free extended trial of Moby Mantis, text radio to 21691. That's radio to 21691 for Moby Mantis.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let Top SEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Webmasterradio.fm. Get addicted. Get ahead.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on Webmasterradio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. We are rounding out the hour. It's the 21st of June, 2012. And when we went to break, the very first commercial was Brad Geddes talking about his certified AdWords management training. And he was offering that training at SMX Toronto about a month ago. And, at one point during the conference, at the same time, just randomly, Brad and I took a step outside to enjoy that fine downtown Toronto air, and we ran across this woman who was an attendee at the conference, and she was working in, let's just say, corporate tourism. And she had a committee of bosses, each of whom had different ideas about their digital marketing strategies, and each of whom were trying to push her in different directions. I mean, she was responsible for everything. And so, while enjoying that fine Toronto air, Brad and I, we've known each other for years, but we start coaching her. We start giving her advice. We start, just peppering her with, she tells us a bit of the story. We react to it, give her a little bit of advice. She tells us a little bit more of the story. And after about 20 minutes, we developed this, what I think would be really useful, but ultimately useless, web promotion strategy or web marketing strategy for her company, and all that sort of stuff. And the reason it was useful was because it would work. The reason it's useless is because she has to go back to her corporate, to her bosses, the committee that she's ruled by, different department here, different department there, different department here, different department there, and explain four or five times over why certain design changes and certain culture changes in their organization, task management and task allocation would be necessary to, if they really want to promote their website on the web, on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is she's never going to get it done. She sees the value in all these great ideas, but she's never going to get it done. And this actually is a segue back into talking about links, link placement, and design. Because, a lot of the small business work seems to have either dried up or become too inexpensive to make it worth it for an SEO firm, given the scope of tasks we have to do on any effective campaign now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of corporate work going around the SEO world right now. And for many people in the SEO world, dealing with corporations, it's kind of a new thing. And they're doing it now, and they're doing it well, I suppose, but because they're still employed. But still, the frustrations. You talk to someone like Lindsay Walker, or talk to someone like Jessica Bowman, and talk about dealing with committees, and you know they just get this like glazed smile because that's their everyday reality. Now, let's go back to effective link building and dealing with the way both human visitors and bots should be referenced around a website, keeping in mind having to deal with organizations or bosses or, you know, owners of websites who don't really get, you know, how things are changing.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at your article here, Dave, and I agree with you know virtually all of it, and you're not calling for major revisions. Exactly what I see you calling for here, actually, when I'm you know in my mind's eye looking at the website or the web page you're telling people they should build, mm-hmm. is the way we were building them 4 or 5 years ago with you know absolute user engagement in mind. And I think the design world has moved away from that into this web chic aesthetic, with you know a lot of graphical information and very little text information on a page.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and there's pros and cons to both. And I mean, you know, I hope the users, and maybe I should have put a huge disclaimer on, because you bring up a good point. I hope the readers of the article know, not all of these. Sometimes breadcrumbs don't work. I mean, sometimes sites don't need them. Rare. But sometimes that's the case. I had to include them, of course, but they're not necessarily going to be part of every single design that somebody does or something like that. But you bring up probably the hardest thing for an SEO. And I think that was a really great point to bring up, and I feel sorry for that woman as well.
Oh, indeed.
Is dealing with people who either, I mean, we've got, you know, either because of ego and they like having their picture on the homepage or, you know, this, that, or the other thing, are resistant to these changes. Even when you're going, but, and you can go in the analytics and go, but your bounce rate is 82%. Yeah, but, right, I like the design, I like pink kittens, right, or whatever.
The oatmeal's Mr. Fluffy, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly, and it's really, really tough to deal with that. It's quite a challenge, and it's funny. I mean, obviously, you know, the larger we've gotten, and I'm sure you can say the same, the larger that you've gotten, the more you're dealing with entities like that, right? The more you're dealing with, call a spade, corporations. We're not just one person is making a decision, and that person's the person hired you, so they trust you.
Right.
It's people who didn't make that decision who are actually trying to pick you apart because mm-hmm. they need to vet everything that's going on, you know, which is fine. I mean, you should be doing work that survives scrutiny. I have absolutely no problem with that. But, yeah, you can hit these significant resistances, and I've actually referred to, because usually you'll have, not always, but usually you'll have a main point of contact. And then she's the one that made the decision, or he's the one that made these decisions. And if you do end up with that, I've often referred to them as my English to English translators, and they do find it entertaining, right? Where it's just like, okay, you understand what they're saying, and you understand what I'm saying. Now you need to bridge this gap to find the middle ground.
What I actually want to get at here is there are ways to do what you're suggesting, to lay out the links in the logical pattern for search bots, yet still present a page that looks a little bit different
mm-hmm.
to the web user, and that's by arranging links in your CSS in such a way that the CSS file is going to get read earlier than other parts of the code, less important parts of the code from a bot perspective.
Very true.
So you can still, this is, I mean, I actually I just used this little ninja trick to work out a big problem we were having in our practice. You can arrange things in the code in such a way that the committee judging you, they don't even know it's there. It's totally legal. You're not violating any Google guidelines. But although I wonder if this kind of CSS arrangement will become the new cloaking in a couple of years. I don't know. I'd be looking at that as an over-optimization signal if I was Google.
Right, but you do wear a tough one because you're not showing anything to the user that you're not, you know, you're showing the same thing to both people. You're just arranging it differently on a page. And in some cases, you're actually doing Google a favor. You're basically going, here's my important stuff. Right, here's my important content. And I think I know the examples you're talking about is where somebody has this huge drop-down navigation thing up in their main nav or something like that that's listing it off at 50, 60 different links. You've got streams of code in there, and you're just like, you know what? I just want to grab that. I'm going to move it down.
You should see what that looks like in code, man. Oh, my God, it's crazy. Like, seriously. My eyes are buggy from this.
But the thing is, in some ways, you're doing Google's job for them because you're taking this big block of code that even on the page isn't really visible. I mean, it is, but it's like one line of links. It's not this vast array of data as it may be appearing in the code. And so you're basically, well, let's paint this in a nice picture and going, you're taking Google's job away from them in a good way, and you're going, here's how my content should be prioritized. Because
yeah,
here's the content that's most visible.
Well, and I'm going to argue that's been the SEO's job since day one, making it easier for the search engines to grasp what this page is about.
Yeah, we'll call it that.
Well, I mean, I'd much rather that than us being web manipulators. You know, I'm the Claritin man, dude. Everything is clear because of me. Okay, we're down to a minute. There's a couple of things I wanted to touch on that we're not going to get a chance to, but I have a quick warning to people who are doing affiliate programs out there. I've avoided pills like almost all of my career, but anyone who's affiliate programming Canadian pharmaceuticals in the States, talk to your lawyer. Do it now. Tell them exactly what you're doing. Show them all of your websites. Talk to them now. Canadian pharmaceuticals are being prosecuted in the United States because of a bunch of fake medication that was being sold across the border. That sucks. And, you know, I hope the prosecutions are heavy if this is true. But if you're out there doing an affiliate program on Canadian pills, talk to your lawyer now. Big warning. It's quite important. You could get in a big mess of trouble. It's a big story that broke this week. I'd like to go into that a lot further, but we don't got time. There was another thing I wanted to touch on. I forget what it was. It's the heat or something. I don't know. Dave, before we go, we're doing a series starting, on the 17th of August?
Yep. I'm going to start it week of Connected Marketing Week.
Down in San Francisco, SES San Francisco, or CMT San Francisco, as they're calling it. This is Country Music Television San Francisco. Connected Marketing Week, CMW.
Yep.
We're going to be running a series on the new basics of SEO, much like we did about 2 years ago. We're asking for listener input. So, any SEOs out there, subject you want us to touch on, or an obvious subject you want to put your two cents on, email us at Webmaster Radio. We're easy enough to find on the internet. Email us at our businesses. You can find those emails out there somewhere. And on behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO in Victoria, British Columbia, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media in Toronto, Ontario. You've been listening to Webcology on WebmasterRadio.fm for the 21st of June, 2012. Stay tuned, friends. Webmaster Radio has lots of goodies coming up for you.